This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray. Looking forward to another preview today on the podcast. Wes Reynolds going to jump on to preview the Mid-American Conference. Hashtag Maction, baby, as the VSiN College Football Betting Guide is out. If you haven't picked that up yet, I don't know what you're doing, but head on over to vsin.com/subscribe. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to have on all of the authors of that guide, including Matt Eumanns, who broke down the Big Ten, Adam Burke later this week, who did a host of conferences. We'll revisit with JVT as Jonathan Von Tobel, my co-host of VSiN Primetime. He wrote up the Big 12, the Mountain West, as well as the mighty Pac-2, Oregon State, Washington State. Zachary Cohen, he broke down the SEC, had some thoughts on the Heisman. We'll recheck in with Tyler Shoemaker. So a whole lot of folks to jump on the podcast to break down all of their analysis, as well as their best bets, as we had a best bets portion there of the guide. And all of the best bets that I wrote up have been given out here on this podcast. And I did want to do something at the end of the podcast today, just to do a status check on where we are from all of the best bets we handed out. And I'm not saying that you should have tailed all of them, but one thing that I don't think we've done in the past is keeping tabs on futures bets. Usually we come on when our Thursday podcast rolls around, me and Matt Eumanns, and we will break down our card and how we fared the next week. But I want to just keep tabs on where we are from our win totals, the Heisman market, is anything moved in our direction against us? So we will break all of that down, as well as add maybe one final addition to the portfolio. I gave it out on Monday night on VSiN Primetime, which, by the way, you can catch 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday on VSiN. So one more add to the portfolio, a little cross-sport parlay. So what could possibly go wrong? But I liked both of these bets. Didn't necessarily want to lay the current price. I added them together, and we will see how it all plays out. So stick around for that, and we'll also do a status check on where we stand on all of my win total bets, how the market has moved. One of those win total bets took a little bit of a hit yesterday, and that was Notre Dame. So back on June 13th, I did a deep dive on Notre Dame prior to chatting with Paul Stone, as we went through a whole host of bets with Paul Stone back in early June. And after my breakdown of Notre Dame, my bet was a little complicated. So if you didn't tail, I fully understood. But what I ultimately did was I split my unit with, I believe, 60% on over 10.5 wins at plus 138, and then 40% on exactly 10 wins at 3-1, giving us a over 9.5 market at minus $2. And ultimately what happened on Monday was Notre Dame lost their starting left tackle, Charles Jagasaw, for the entire season. And we're going to get a more in-depth breakdown on that with Pete Sampson, who covers Notre Dame here, in just a matter of moments. But it was interesting to note this from a market standpoint, and I was fortunate enough to get under 49 before the market moved, Texas A&M Notre Dame week one in College Station. And I was texting with Brad Powers, professional handicapper, frequent guest of the podcast, and he actually jumped on VSiN Primetime last night to talk about it. But I asked what he anticipated to happen, and he felt like there would be a movement towards A&M and a movement towards the under. And ultimately both of that happened, and he grabbed the under 49 as well. So that number moved to 47 just with the left tackle news. And also Texas A&M moved to a 1-point favorite. Now throughout the offseason, that number has kind of moved. Texas A&M got as high as around 1.5-point favorite, went to a pick, and now sits at Texas A&M minus one. But you know, for Notre Dame, I was on VSiN Primetime last week. I was on vacation, but jumped on with JVT and Joe Serrallo, and they asked, if Notre Dame is to not meet expectations, what goes wrong. And I'm going to ask this question to Pete here in just a moment. But I think the thing to me was always the offensive line. Left tackle, Joe Alt, he goes off to the NFL, highest drafted offensive lineman this past year, fifth overall. Right tackle, Blake Fisher, he goes 59th overall in the second round of the Houston Texans. So Notre Dame, a team with expectations to make the college football playoff, with odds that sit at minus 180 for them to make the college football playoff at circa, minus 165 at DraftKings, they now have massive questions at both tackle positions. And they had questions entering this year, and now they took even a bigger hit to that depth. Now, the schedule still works out in Notre Dame's favor this year. They open up with Texas A&M, as we've talked about. However, the rest of the season is very manageable because Notre Dame should be a favorite in all of those games moving forward. For the Irish, the schedule breaks down this way. At Texas A&M, week one, home to Northern Illinois, at Purdue, home to Miami of Ohio, home to Louisville, bye week, Stanford, neutral site at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech, that game will be played at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but that should be maybe a 50-50 crowd, Notre Dame, Georgia Tech. Neutral site against Navy at the Meadowlands, bye week, Florida State at home, Virginia at home, Yankee Stadium versus Army, and then USC on the road to close out the year. Right now, game of the year markets has Notre Dame around a 5-point favorite against Florida State, same number against USC, around a 9.5-point favorite against Louisville as well. So we haven't seen too much movement in the win total market. I would say some steam to the under on 10.5 wins, which I know FanDuel is still offering and a couple other shops. We had Bruce Feldman on the podcast early on in the offseason. He actually liked under 10.5, which I don't disagree with. I do think that, you know, there is a little bit of wiggle room for you if you were to play under 10.5. And I know Brad Powers tweeted out that he is looking to bet the under 10.5. And maybe that's why we saw some of that movement. So he said this on the show yesterday, Brad, that is, of all the injuries that have come out so far during the early portion of college camps, Notre Dame losing their left tackle, Charles Jagasaw, is the biggest injury so far in the early portions of camp. We're going to talk to Wes Reynolds in just a little bit as he will preview the Mid-American Conference. But right now, let's welcome in Pete Sampson, who covers Notre Dame for The Athletic. Follow him on Twitter at Pete Sampson _. All right, Pete, let's start with the basics. Charles Jagasaw done for the year. How big of a loss is this for Notre Dame?
If I had to put together a list of the top five players they could least afford to lose, he would be in the top five comfortably, maybe even only behind Riley Leonard and Benjamin Morrison. So it's, it's really significant. And this is, again, he's played 73 snaps. Not a lot. But in terms of just his physical ability, he is the best of the position, tackle, guard, center, all that. And to lose him where they just don't have a lot of quality depth is a really, really difficult blow.
What's next?
They will probably go with Tosh Baker at left tackle and Emil Wagner at right tackle. Tosh Baker played a little bit there last year. Emil Wagner, I think, has played all of 52 snaps in his career. Emil Wagner is, a big-time athlete who's growing into an offensive lineman. Tosh Baker is experienced but doesn't have a lot of the, I think, quick twitch athleticism you need at left tackle. So it's, I think you're going to see a lot of sort of tight end help at Texas A&M. I just don't think that they can do anything other than make the best of a rough situation at this point.
So Mike Denbrock was the biggest, arguably, acquisition for Notre Dame this offseason, and I lump in Riley Leonard coming in from Duke. He was the offensive coordinator at LSU. This is his third stint with Notre Dame. Prior, most recently, he was with Brian Kelly. You actually had a sit-down with him, and I encourage everyone to go read that article up at The Athletic. You know, when you think back to your conversation just less than a week ago with Mike Denbrock, what was his feeling on this offensive line, and was it, could you read between the tea leaves, Pete, that it was his biggest concern about this offense?
Yeah, it's definitely his biggest concern about the offense, which is like not saying a whole lot when you look at the other positions. Like they're pretty well stacked at the other, you know, running back, quarterback, tight end, receiver. Like they're in good shape at all of those, great at some of them. He felt like offensive line was most improved. Again, is that saying a whole lot? I don't think so, because like they had the most ground they needed to make up. I think what stuck with me the most is when I asked him about young players coming on, he's like, I really, really like our two young offensive tackles, like a lot. Like Charles has a chance to be great. That obviously, we're not going to see that this year. So that's a difficult blow, because it's not like there were other offensive linemen coming up short of Ashton Craig at center, who I think they like quite a bit. But that position now is very developmental. I think that for their careers, or for last season, I think they returned 2,221 snaps, which is about half as many snaps as they returned a year prior with their starting five. So they're in a difficult spot right now. They have to figure out how to make the best of it.
So I talked about it briefly in the open. We did see a little bit of movement in the betting market when this news came out. The under went from 49 to 47, the total, I should say. And then Texas A&M moved out to a 1-point favorite. Let's look at Texas A&M first, and then we could kind of look more big picture for the entire year, Pete. In your eyes, this is a fascinating game because Mike Elko obviously was once upon a time Notre Dame's defensive coordinator. Colin Klein's a new offensive coordinator there. Notre Dame went after him 2 years ago. So there's a lot of interesting nuggets here. And then maybe the most is that Riley Leonard was Mike Elko's quarterback a year ago. With this news coming out, and we still have over 3 weeks before you'll be in College Station and we'll all be watching on primetime on ABC on August 31st, does your opinion change on this game after this injury?
Yes. And I think the betting market is probably about how I'd feel on it. It's not this. If Riley Leonard got hurt, it would be a different story. Or if we knew Benjamin Morrison couldn't play after the shoulder injury, if he had a setback, that would move it more than it would with Charles Jagasaw. But you know, what's Texas A&M's strength? They have a great defensive line. They have very good linebacker play. So this, I think it just compresses the margin for error in the game for Notre Dame, where you're figuring out, okay, how can you win this game 15 to 11? It's just, I think it will be very rock fight-ish. Whereas like, you know, if Jagasaw is in there, maybe you hold up a pass rusher for an extra beat or two and Riley Leonard is able to either take off or, you know, hit Jaden Greyhouse for a bomb. It's I think it just is going to make it very difficult for Notre Dame to play smooth offense. Like they were already going to struggle with that. Like Mike Denbrock talked, like we're not going to start the season like a juggernaut. So they knew this was going to be a work in progress. And now that's just it's just a lot more. They're going to have to hope for a lot more to get done early in the season, you know, in these kind of matchup.
Does it change your expectation for this year? We've seen the market move a little bit for this Texas A&M game, Pete, but from a make the playoff standpoint, it hasn't moved. Circa still is minus 180 for them to make the playoff. Mm-hmm. DraftKings is minus 165. Win total at most places is still 10. Couple 10 and a halfs out there, which seems a little ambitious, but with this news coming out, you have 3+ weeks to try to figure things out. Obviously, you're facing a really good defensive line, like you alluded to, with Texas A&M. Does this injury change your opinion on how you think Notre Dame will be on November 30th in Los Angeles against USC?
No, because I think that they can figure out the offensive line over the course of 3 months. And like Notre Dame losing at A&M, it was not out of the realm of possibility at full strength. I still like them as a playoff team, even if they lost opening week. So the fact that they may go in there with Tosh Baker and struggle to keep Riley Leonard upright, that doesn't change a whole lot. I think they have some other options, whether it's Sullivan Abshur or maybe they go with a freshman like Anthony Knapp or Gerby Lambert. Like those are not ideal situations, but you're going to need some time to get to them during the season. So they still have that. I still think they will start multiple configurations of their offensive line this season. I probably felt that way even if Jagasaw was healthy. So that you know, the offensive line getting right by midseason, I think is very reasonable. And if that happens, then, you know, that shouldn't change the outlook with the playoff.
All right, I'll let you out of here on this. I was on vacation last week. I had just crossed the border into Indiana, and I was doing a radio hit with my show, VSiN Primetime, and I was asked this question, the ceiling and the floor for Notre Dame, what goes right, what goes wrong? So I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. I said, look, this team could go 12-0. The schedule's doable, and Riley Leonard could be a hit, and he could be the pro prospect that some people believe he is. Nate Tice, my buddy at Yahoo Sports, thinks that he's the best pro prospect quarterback in college football this year. So that hits, the wide receivers hit, the defense is as good as we anticipate. I think Notre Dame, the ceiling is 12-0. The floor, Pete, it would be, in my opinion, and I am sometimes irrational as a Notre Dame fan, if they go 9-3, I think it's a disaster. I really do, barring catastrophic injury. So let's remove catastrophic injury, Pete. Ceiling floor for Notre Dame this year, what goes right? And they go, maybe in your eyes, 12-0. What goes wrong? And they're back in El Paso, and I'm on the sidelines for the Sun Bowl.
12-0 is the ceiling for sure. I don't think a ton needs to go right for them to hit the ceiling. I think the defense is going to be just phenomenal. They should be better than they were last year when they were very, very good. I don't see teams scoring. Like, it's one of those defenses that at the end of the year, you're going to look back and like, oh, they allowed 13.7 points per game. They should be a real pain to play against. And then offensively, like Riley Leonard, I understand like the interest in the draft and the like he doesn't need to be a pro prospect to hit at Notre Dame. Like he just needs to be a really good college quarterback, you know, be mobile, be a 62% passer, but finish the year with 6 or 7 rushing touchdowns and 400 or 500 yards. I think that's reasonable. Like that's how you're beating Texas A&M. Riley Leonard carries the ball 11 times. 9-3 to me would be a disaster with the money that Notre Dame has invested in its coordinators and its roster, not just getting Riley Leonard and RJ Oben, Jordan Clark, and those guys, but also bringing back Riley Mills, Howard Cross, Jack Kaiser, Xavier Watts, keeping Benjamin Morrison here. Like they have put a lot of money into this season. And a minor bowl game is no return on investment. Like I think 10-2 would be disappointing, honestly. Like if they're not, we talked floor, we talked ceiling, like expectations. You need to be hosting a playoff game in Notre Dame Stadium in December for the season to feel like a success, in my opinion. And then you need to win that game. After that, maybe we can talk about, like, did you run into Kansas State in round two or did you run into Ohio State in round two? Like, those are two different animals. So host a playoff game. To me, that is the bar Marcus Freeman absolutely has to clear in year three. And if he does, he will be rewarded handsomely. If he doesn't, I think there's going to be a lot of side eye about like, okay, where's this program headed?
Follow Pete on Twitter at PeteSampson_. Read all his work at The Athletic. And also check out the podcast who some jabroni got a shout out the other day, which was very uncalled for. That was me. Okay. The Independent is the podcast. He and Matt Fortuna, and they do a great job covering Notre Dame. Pete, appreciate it. I know I bug you a lot, but I appreciate you jumping on here to give us the breaking news on the biggest injury maybe so far in college football.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, Wes Reynolds joins us right now, and he is one of the many authors of the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, available on VSiN.com. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe to check out all of the offers we've got going on. Wes, we just talked about Notre Dame and the big injury that they are dealing with Charles Jagasaw. We're going to stay in the state of Indiana and your alma mater. What a homer you are as the Indiana Hoosiers, Wes. Win total sits at 5.5. Juice varies. Circa minus 125. DraftKings minus 130. As always, look around, see if you can find a better juice. But let's look at these Indiana Hoosiers. Kirk Cignetti comes in after a masterful job at James Madison. I would love for them to pull the outright upset week 3 on the road at UCLA. There's no Oregon on this schedule. There is no Penn State on this schedule. There's no USC on this schedule. A lot of production returning for Kirk Cignetti in year 1, headed up to your alma mater. Why are you bullish on the Hoosiers?
Yeah, and Tim, to be fair, I do have close to 40 years of watching some really bad football out of Bloomington, Indiana. So my optimism is always with some caution. Put that disclaimer out there. But yeah, look, I like that the attitude that Kurt Cignetti is bringing in here, and it's kind of about time. Indiana, I think from the top to the bottom, from the top administrators to the fan base, to the students, to the alums, they've always had a loser mentality because that's what you're going to have when you lose most of the time and don't go to as many bowl games as you should out of a Power Four conference. But I like what he's doing here. He's coming in and is like, we're going to win here. I win. Google me. Was his quote at the introductory press conference. Look, they went 19-4 over the last two seasons at James Madison. He's won everywhere he's been, you know, at IU, Pennsylvania, in Division II, at Elon, now at James Madison. You know, he took over the Dukes too and led them to the FCS national title game and to the national semifinals twice in three seasons. Then they had to transition to FBS and they were ready to compete right away in the Sun Belt. So, you know, when you look, people I think are thinking, oh, well, the Sun Belt to the Big Ten, that's a jump. Yeah, it sure is. But you know what? James Madison was a better football team with better players than Indiana had last year. And they're bringing in 12 players from JMU. 9 of them are likely going to start. 7 assistant coaches, including both coordinators. So, yeah, it's a big step up. But I think there's a little advantage here for Indiana in terms of the transfer portal, because usually you don't want to live and die with that portal, but you were kind of forced to with this new coach. But they come from a winning culture. So when you have so many people and it's not like, okay, pick a guy from this program and a guy from that program. When you have so many transfers from the same program, they have a culture of winning. And I think that that rubs off on other guys. And there's 31 total transfers, by the way, into Indiana, including Curtis Rourke, who comes in from Ohio University, where he's likely going to win the starting job, 50 TD passes and just and 16 interceptions in three seasons. But yeah, look, I think that this Indiana team has got some confidence and there's a different attitude change and there's a culture change. Like you said, Tim, the schedule is pretty permissible. If they are to go to the Rose Bowl on September 14th, and you know, it'd be a slight upset of UCLA. They're not going to be that big of an underdog because they've got a rebuild going out there. UCLA, by the way, in Los Angeles, just to let you know, Tim.
wasn't aware of that. Thanks to Sean Foster.
Just wanted to put that out there. But look, FIU, Western Illinois at UCLA, Charlotte, and then Maryland in the post Talia Tagovailoa era. So they're going to maybe take a step back. Indiana could be 5-0. That is not far fetched to think going up there to Northwestern for their new stadium. And like you mentioned, there's only like really two games that I think, okay, they're going to lose at Ohio State and probably Michigan at home, even though Michigan's a little bit down. So I think this team for sure is going bowling. Not going to a bowl would be a massive disappointment, I think, based on this schedule. And there's a possibility this team could win 7 or 8.
Well, the all-important question, as the last time Indiana played in a bowl game, it was the Outback Bowl against Ole Miss in that Michael Penix season. Will noted alum Wes Reynolds be at Indiana's bowl game this December or January?
I certainly will. I did not get to go to the Outback because it was the COVID year. And look, that was a New Year's Day bowl too, because that's always what we wanted for Indiana. Can we get in like a New Year's Day bowl? We'd prefer the one in Pasadena, but beggars can't be choosers. But I was there at the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville when they blew that 2-touchdown lead with about 3.5 minutes to go to Tennessee. So, you know, I will definitely be in attendance and I will be in the Rose Bowl. I get to see a game in the Rose Bowl, Tim, finally. but it is regular season, unfortunately.
Yeah, I have yet to go to the Rose Bowl. It is on my list. I don't know. Maybe I'll have to join you because UCLA is a win total that I do have under, and we'll rehash all of the win totals that we've been giving out all throughout the postseason here in the final segment of the podcast. All right, Wes, let's get to the conference that you wrote up for the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. It's a conference that we get to love oh so dearly come the month of November when they're playing midweek games, hashtag Maction. And it's interesting to note from a future standpoint where there are two teams that seem to be a cut above, and that is Miami, your defending champ, and Toledo, a team that was ranked nationally heading into the MAC championship a year ago before Miami won as a touchdown underdog. So what's interesting to note from this standpoint is DraftKings and FanDuel sit at around plus 250, plus 230, but Circa sits at plus 375 on the Redhawks. Toledo, pretty status quo, around 280, 285. In your opinion, Wes, who is the rightful favorite in the MAC entering 2024?
I think Miami is, even though I'm not picking them to win the conference, just because, look, they bring back Brett Gabbert. Keep in mind, Miami did that last year, won the MAC title without Brett Gabbert. They had a kid named Avion Smith, who is more of like a running quarterback, and that's basically what Miami did. You know, do no harm on offense, play elite defense. They were actually one of the better defensive teams statistically in the country. I think they were seventh in points allowed per game, 15.9 a game, and returned several six starters on that side of the ball. But Brett Gabbert is back for them, so they at least are going to be able to throw the football. Now, one big loss, and people will scoff, you know, at the loss on special teams, but they lose, and this is kind of endemic of the MAC, I think, Tim, is that this conference gets picked apart by the portal. Yep. Or even kickers get picked out of your pilfered from your programs. And the best one in the country, the Lou Groza Award winner, Graham Nicholson, is now going to be down in Alabama with the Crimson Tide. So that's a key, too, for Miami, because Chuck Martin, you know, kind of a conservative coach by nature. And there are a lot of times he had this ace in the hole with this kicker, and he played for field goals. And absolutely relied on him a lot, and that's how they won the MAC title. But a lot of tests early for Miami out of conference. They got to go to Northwestern. They got to go to Notre Dame. You play that victory bell game against Cincinnati, who Miami, by the way, beat for the first time in 16 years last season. So they could start 0-3. Then you got to go on the road to Toledo in the revenge spot from the MAC title game, and you got to go to Bowling Green. Schedule's tougher, so I would lean actually under 8 on the win total. Did not bet it. I think they're the rightful favorite going in just because they probably are the more settled at quarterback. But I don't think the Redhawks are repeating in the MAC.
Yeah, and when you look at Miami, their win total differs at different shops, right? So if you want to play that under, make sure you grab that 8, which is out there at DraftKings and I think some other shops. Where I sit right now recording this podcast with you, Wes, at Circa, it's down to 7.5. So sometimes it's not always telling, but you know, Circa believed to be one of, if not the sharpest college football shop out there, and their win total sits a half game under where other shops are at. Let's get to the Toledo Rockets. Jason Candle entering year 9. I don't know if he wanted to be there 9 years, but he is still there at Toledo. He's a guy that, when you look at the program that they have at Toledo, year after year, they tend to have the best talent. Now, they lost Penny Boone and Daquan Finn, their running back and their quarterback, which I'm sure you'll get into here. Massive losses there. This was a team that was nationally ranked heading into the MAC championship last year before losing said game to Miami, lost their bowl game as well to Wyoming. Year after year, though, they usually have the best talent. Their non-conference seems a little bit more manageable. They don't have three Power 5 teams like you look at Miami. They've got Duquesne, they've got UMass, they've got Western Kentucky. They do have to go to Stark Vegas. But less production returning for the Rockets. What do you anticipate from Toledo heading into this year? Right now at DraftKings, their win total sits at 8.5, shaded to the under.
Yeah, Tim, it's kind of funny that you bring up you didn't know if Jason Candle wanted to be there that long, and it just triggered a memory of mine. Having a conversation one time with former Bowling Green men's basketball coach Dan Dockich, who goes, you don't want to stay too long in the MAC. You want to win big and get out if you're a coach. But nevertheless, Jason Candle is still here, and they have a lot of attrition. You mentioned Finn being gone. It's now Tucker Gleason that will take over as quarterback. Gleason started at Georgia Tech originally. Played a little bit last season and losing Penny Boone, but Jackass Stewart, who was the all MAC kick returner specialist, ran for about a little less than 600 yards and 8 touchdowns. They get 5 of their 6 top pass catchers back. So I think they're going to be fine there. The offensive line is going to take a little time to rebuild. Defensive line, plenty of depth. They were pretty damn good against the pass on defense last season, but that helps when you have a first round draft pick in Quinyon Mitchell, who's now with the Philadelphia Eagles. But a couple all MAC safeties are back. So you look at Toledo, Tim, they actually they won 11 games in a row after they blew that game against Illinois. They should have won that game. They could have been undefeated had they not had a couple miscues late against Illinois. You got to go to Mississippi State. That's a new coach down there, though, with Jeff Lebby. And you got to go to Western Kentucky. You do get Miami in the Glass Bowl for the revenge game. And you do only have one road game against a team with a winning record from last year, and that was Northern Illinois. So Toledo, like, when in doubt, even though there's not much separation in the conference in terms of talent, they usually are on the more talented end in the conference. So I think Toledo, actually my pick to make the MAC title game, Toledo was one of them, and the other was Northern Illinois.
So before we get to that, and I'm glad you brought that up, so Toledo versus Northern Illinois, last year we had divisions in the MAC East and West. Miami came out of the East. Toledo came out of the West. Northern Illinois was also in the West. We're entering into a world in most conferences now where there's no more divisions. Did that tweak how you went about looking at your conference championship prediction, Wes?
A little bit, Tim, because it is this pod schedule is what they're terming it as now. So like Northern Illinois, who I did pick to be one of the two participants in Ford Field for the MAC title game, they have 3 of their final 4 opponents on the schedule coming off bye weeks. Mm. So, you know, that's a little bit of a tricky schedule. And then plus you have the weeknight aspect of this conference to obviously get more television exposure. So those wrinkles, I do think, matter, because you're not just playing your one division, then your cross division rival necessarily here. So you are getting some teams with easier schedules and some teams with tougher schedules. So like Western Michigan, for example, where I lean to the over with them, they don't have to face Miami or Toledo, even though they have a lot of turnover on the coaching staff, both new coordinators on both sides of the ball, but they actually return the most starters in the conference for whatever that means. Because one thing about returning starters, and I'm sure you've gone over this on the podcast and on VSiN Primetime, returning starters aren't created equal like what they were maybe 5-10 years ago, because you may have a guy that was a returning starter but at another program. So you get so much less roster continuity now with these teams.
Yeah, no, it is. It's interesting. And also in the MAC, if your players aren't getting poached, how good are they, right?
Right.
You alluded to it. Toledo, you look at, Penny Boone, the MAC player of the year, the offensive player of the year. He's at UCF. Daquan Finn, he's now the starter at Baylor. Miami, you also mentioned that, the Lou Groza winner in Graham Nicholson, the kicker goes away. Rashad Amos hits the portal as well. He's at Ole Miss. So some of these top teams did get hit by the transfer portal. Let's move on to the boys from DeKalb in Northern Illinois. This is a team that you look at them in the market, you can catch them as high as around plus 750. Circa sits at plus 575. Win total is 6.5 for the Huskies. I think most people are of the mindset that this is probably the third best team in the conference this year. Two big challenging non-con games. They have to go to Notre Dame and to NC State. What do you make of the Huskies, and are they worth a shot at around plus 750 to win this conference, Wes?
Yeah, Tim, I was down to them and Bowling Green. We'll get to Bowling Green in a moment here in terms of, who's going to be the dark horse really in this league. league. But you look at Northern Illinois, they've had a lot of variance. They were 3-9 in 2019. They were 0-6 in the COVID season. Then they went 9-5 and won the MAC title. And then 3-9 in 2022, 7-6 last season. One thing I like about NIU is that they're one of the more, if not the most physical team in the conference. Now they got to find a new quarterback. Rocky Lombardi is now gone and in the National Football League trying to make a roster. So it looks like it's going to be Ethan Hampton, who has made 6 starts over the last 3 seasons. I think he'll end up winning the job. So quarterback's a question mark, but you got 4 back on the offensive line as starters, your top 2 pass catchers. You also return a 1,300-yard running back in Ontario Brown, who is first team all MAC. So they're going to be probably the best rushing team in the MAC, and I think that they're going to be a little more run heavy. Defensively, they have some roster attrition, especially on that defensive line, but in the secondary and in the linebacking core, I think that they're pretty good. The non-conference you mentioned is tough. You got to go to Notre Dame. You got to go to NC State. But one thing to keep in mind, Northern Illinois really struggled to start the year last year. They were 1-4, and then they won 5 of their last 7. Despite all the transfers leaving this program, they have 30 seniors on this roster, which is a rarity, now, and especially a conference like the MAC. But I just think that they're a physical team. And, you know, looking at what they do here, they do get Toledo at home, which is a break. Now they have to go to Miami, but they get some of the easier opponents too. They do get Buffalo, a first year head coach, and Pete Lembo, who was at Ball State previously in the MAC, and Pete's a good coach, but you know, it's going to take maybe a year or two to get that Buffalo program right. And you also get Akron and Kent, probably going to be the doormats in the league again, by the way.
Yeah, so we get to Bowling Green. You mentioned Northern Illinois in the production, according to Phil Steele, 21st in the country per his rankings in returning production, comparing that to Toledo, 110, and Miami sitting at 50. A team with a decent amount of production and another coach who's been there for a while. It's interesting to note that the MAC has got some coaching continuity, which, once again, as we alluded to, may or may not be a good thing. Chuck Martin has been at Miami now for 11 years. Jason Candle at Toledo for 9. Thomas Hammock has been now at Northern Illinois. This is his 6th season. And Scott Leffler, he's sitting there in his 6th season. 2 years ago, one of my favorite win totals was Bowling Green over, and they were able to get that and get to a bowl game. And then I faded them last year thinking there's no way this team's going to get the bowl eligibility. And lo and behold, they won 7 games in the regular season. So that was not ideal for me. And they won a big game as a 3-touchdown underdog on the road at Georgia Tech. So you alluded to it. It was Northern Illinois or Bowling Green. If you're looking to take a bit of a flyer, you can find Bowling Green as high as 7-1 in the market to win the conference. What do you make of the Falcons this year?
Yeah, and if you look, Bowling Green last year, I understand maybe if you wanted to fade them last year based on their schedule. Look at who they had to face. They lost their 5 games were to opponents with a combined 60-10 record. They had to play Michigan, who, oh, by the way, was pretty good, national champion. Liberty, who was 13-1. Miami of Ohio, 11-3. Toledo, 11-3. Ohio, 10-3. So even with trips to Penn State and to Texas A&M, this is still an easier schedule, at least on the surface, for Bowling Green. So first winning season for Scott Leffler in his 5th year in the program. They did lose the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit to Minnesota, just got overpowered at the line of scrimmage. Connor Basilak is back, the well-traveled Connor Basilak, who was at Mizzou and then, of course, was at Indiana. 6-year college football, 2nd season at Bowling Green. So he shared duties with Camden Orff. Camden Orff's a little bit more of the running quarterback. Basilak more of the passer. This offense was 108th nationally last year, but they bring back their leading rusher. They bring back their leading receiver, 4 offensive line starters. So offensively, they should have some continuity. Now, can they force the turnovers on defense that they did last year? They are actually tied for 1st in the nation with most turnovers forced at 28 with Clemson and Cal, respectively. 7 starters back on that side of the ball. Keep in mind, this Bowling Green team did defeat a Power 4 school on the road last year, beat Georgia Tech. I think they were 21-point underdogs, if I recall, and beat them 38-27, finished the regular season on a 6-2 run. So they do have a little bit of a tougher conference schedule. And then you mentioned that earlier, Tim, with no divisions, you have, you know, a lot of different scheduling quirks in this where some teams have easier and some teams have tougher. So they got to go to Toledo and play in the Glass Bowl. They got Miami of Ohio at home. They don't get to avoid Northern Illinois. They don't get to avoid what perhaps is an improved Western Michigan team. So they don't get as many breaks in the schedule, Bowling Green, which is why I leaned a little bit with Northern Illinois. But look, I like this team over 6.5 wins. I think that they're going to get back bowling second year in a row.
Yeah, Bowling Green right now, market-wide, sitting at 6.5. Juice varies at different shops. I'm looking at DraftKings right now, and their juice is plus money to the over at plus 110. I think Serco is around even money. So you've seen money hit the market on that 6 number where obviously you would get a push at 6. Now you need them to get to 7, but you're getting plus money on the over. You alluded to Western Michigan. This is a team right now, if you look at the tiers of this conference, Miami and Toledo seem to be in a tier above themselves. Northern Illinois, Bowling Green, and then Western Michigan are kind of in that next clump, all in that plus 650, plus 575 range. So Lance Taylor, he's entering year number 2 as a head coach of the Broncos. They bring back a ton of production. You alluded to it already. I believe Western Michigan brings back the most production in this conference. They open up Wisconsin, Ohio State, then things get considerably softer. What do you make of the Broncos win total sitting at around 6.5 across the market?
Yeah, I do lean over, Tim, just because of the production on the roster. But really the most change they have on the roster is on the coaching staff roster. They have 2 new coordinators here. The OC went to take over at Stony Brook as the head coach, and then Lou Esposito on the defensive side, now the defensive line coach for Sharon Moore up in Ann Arbor. So Walt Bell comes in as offensive coordinator, was fired midseason last year at Indiana. Scott Power was also let go on the defensive side. So, you know, is that okay? Maybe it was just a bad mix or a bad fit, and these guys are kind of out for redemption. Like, yeah, we can still coach and we have something to prove. So that could be a deal there. Hayden Wolf is going to be the starter at quarterback, 5th-year senior, played 3 years at Old Dominion before he came to Kalamazoo last year. They have the freshman of the year in the backfield, Jalen Buckley, who was just over 1,000-yard rusher. Kayshawn King also was formerly at Virginia Tech. They're going to have a 1-2 punch. 3 of the top 4 pass catchers are back. On defense, the 15 guys played 250 or more snaps last season, and 12 of them are back. But it was the 10th defense in a 12-team conference, so there's nowhere to go necessarily but up. You mentioned how difficult. That's as difficult of a non-conference schedule as you get, at least the first 2 games. But they don't draw Miami, and they don't draw Toledo. So that's obviously a break for this team. So I think I ended up – usually I ended up balanced, not by design, in terms of – you know, who you have for an over pick, who you have for an under pick on a win total. I think I had 7 overs and 5 unders this season in the MAC.
All right, let's get to Ohio. Tim Albin enters year number 4. For many, many years, it was Frank Solich. They were never able to get over the hump and win that conference title, and still haven't gotten there, losing the conference championship game in 2022. Last year, certainly a solid season for the Bobcats, going 9-3, winning their bowl game in emphatic fashion. But this is a team that loses a lot. We already talked about the fact that Curtis Rourke has moved on, their quarterback, to Indiana. So a big loss there. A lot of other pieces have moved on, and this is a team that does not bring back much production at all. Looking at Phil Steele, experience rank dead last in the country for the Ohio Bobcats. Week 1, they open up on the road at Syracuse. You've seen market movement towards the Bobcats, towards the Orange in that game. Ohio opened as a 13-point dog, out to 17. When you look at Ohio, you can get under 6.5 at DraftKings. At here at Circa, it sits at 6, and I think under 6.5, Wes, is something that you're looking at.
Yeah, that was one of the unders I like, and I think Ohio, this is going to be a rebuilding year. They've won double-digit games for the last 2 seasons and 5 straight bowl games dating back to 2017, but they lose 34 Lettermen this year. They have 39 new players in this program, plus you're having Tim Albin's having to replace both coordinators. Now, it is promote from within, so at least there's some continuity there, but still, They don't get a ton of breaks, as you mentioned in the schedule. I'll get to that momentarily. But it's not only losing Curtis Rourke at quarterback. You lose Bangura, who is their leading rusher, who is now at Minnesota. They also lose their top seven pass catchers. So the leading receiver coming back for these guys, I believe, had 11 catches last year, and no one else had more than three catches in a career as a Bobcat. Spread option, Parker Navarro, who won the bowl game for him in the Myrtle Beach Bowl, probably a better schematic fit, but he just doesn't have a lot around him. And then you look at the roster on the defense. Spence Nowinski is now the defensive coordinator at Memphis. He took that job during the spring. This group was actually sixth in the nation in scoring defense, only allowing 15.8 a game. But you got to replace your top three tacklers. You don't have any starters back at linebacker. Bradley Weaver did return. He went into the portal to Utah State and then came back, so that at least helps him out. But the non-conference you mentioned is not that easy. You got to go to Syracuse. You got to go to Kentucky. You get South Alabama. Major Applewhite now takes over as head coach there as Kane Womack takes the defensive coordinator job at Alabama. But South Alabama, look, they've been higher end in the Sun Belt, so that's not a guaranteed win in Athens, I think, from an Ohio standpoint. They do avoid Northern Illinois. They do avoid Bowling Green. But they do play four teams off bye weeks, including three of their last four games. I mentioned that with Northern Illinois. So the schedule is a little bit tougher. You know, 6-6 might be this team's ceiling, Tim, because they do still get Kent, who is a rebuilding team. They still get Akron. Those are games that they should win. They get Ball State, who Mike knew it might be the coach on the hot seat up there in Muncie because they wanted to pay less of a buyout. So that's, I think, the main reason why they brought Mike New back for another season in Muncie. That's a team in transition as well, where I would lean under their win total.
Ohio under 6.5, Bowling Green over 6.5. You can get plus money on Bowling Green over. And Ohio, you have to pay a decent amount of juice. But for me personally, I don't mind laying juice, especially if you're getting that half win here at Circa. It sits at 6, so you get a push on 6. Before we let you run, Wes, we've seen a little bit of different mindset on Central Michigan, a team at Circa that's down to 10-1. So they have the 6 shortest odds at Circa. Jim McElwain entering another year for the Chippewas, year number 6. Man, hard to believe that the former Florida coach has been up there in Mount Pleasant for 6 years. Any thoughts on the Chips, who sit right now at Circa at around 10-1? DraftKings are up around 14-1 to win this conference.
Tim, I thought this was the hardest team in the conference, really, to get a handle on, because, you know, they do have continuity, you would think, on defense. Rob Akey has been with Jim McElwain since that final year where he was down in Canesville as the Florida head coach. However, offensively, I still don't believe they've named an offensive coordinator, at least at press time of our betting guide. So it looked like maybe they were going to promote from within, and it was going to be play calling by committee. Here's the problem with Central Michigan if you've watched them. Bert Emanuel Jr. is the best player and the best athlete in the program. You need the football in his hands. But the problem is, can he play quarterback? And that's the issue. And they've tried to do it. He's just not a good passer. Man, he's a really dynamic runner. He can also catch the football. But gosh, he has just 45 pass attempts because he was pretty much a run quarterback. And Jace Bauer was the thrower. Jace Bauer, by the way, now transfers to Sam Houston State. So Joey LaBosse, the Iowa backup, comes in to challenge for the starting job. They're still going to be a run-heavy team. And maybe Tabita Thompson, the run game coordinator, and the O-line coach is going to be the play caller, unless they do hire somebody before the season. A little late in the game to do that right now. Defense got hit hard by graduation. Now they got to go to Illinois, but none of the 4 non-conference opponents made the postseason last year. But you get four games against team off bye weeks, and you also played the top 5 teams in the MAC last year. And 3 of those, by the way, Miami of Ohio, Toledo, and Northern Illinois, are on the road. I would only have to look under here, because I just don't think Bert Emanuel Jr. can play quarterback. I know how dynamic he is, and you got to get the football to him, but everybody else and every defense in the conference and anybody that they'll play are going to know that too. So, you know, until I see an identity out of Central Michigan offensively, this is not a team I can back with regularity.
All right, final thoughts here. We didn't hit on some of the quote, cellar dwellers, Ball State, Buffalo, Eastern Michigan, the Zips of Akron or Kent State. Anything of note of those final five teams that I mentioned from a win total perspective or anything kind of you found unique doing a deep dive on this conference?
Well, on Eastern Michigan, look, Chris Creighton and them guys have gone to bowl games 3 years in a row. I'm sure they would prefer not to remember 59-10 losing to South Alabama last year. Not a lot of starters back, but they do have a new quarterback who's a very familiar face in the MAC, Cole Snyder, who is at Buffalo, started 25 games there. So I think he could be an upgrade at that position. This was another team to get a tough handle on. I leaned over. But this is a team that went three straight bowl games, and all of a sudden their win total is at 4.5. They don't necessarily have gimmies in the non-conference, except for UMass, by the way, is going to be the 13th MAC team last year. So it's technically a non-conference opponent, even though they're going to get a bit used to this team. But they got to go to Washington. They got Jacksonville State at home and Rich Rod. They should be one of the better teams in their conference, and they have an FCS opponent. So Eastern Michigan, they only averaged 19.5 points a game last year. And I guess the offense could only get better with Snyder at quarterback. They have some injured guys on defense that didn't play last year that are coming back. So that could be a good thing. So I guess a small lean to the over 4.5, but this is not a team I expect to challenge, even though Chris Creighton, he's probably overachieved with this club the last 3 years.
Don Brown and the UMass Minutemen, yeah, they play 5 games against the MAC this year. Also 3 games against the SEC, but the Minutemen headed to the MAC for a second time in football, but for a first time in all sports come next year. It never stops, Wes. We're always talking about conference changing, and UMass will be a member of the Mid-American Conference come next year. You could read about the MAC courtesy of Wes Reynolds in the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. And, of course, catch Wes and Matt Humans, that is, easy for me to remember, late night on VSiN, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern Time, right here on VSiN. Wes, always appreciate it, man, and we'll talk to you soon.
Tim, good to be with you, as always.
There he is. Wes Reynolds will wrap up the podcast. We've got another best bet to add to the portfolio. We'll do that next.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Thanks again to Wes Reynolds helping us break down the Mid-American Conference. Later on this week, Adam Burke, very busy man on our College Football Betting Guide. He wrote up the AAC, the ACC, and the Sun Belt. I wonder if he got confused at all doing the AAC and the ACC for our guide, but he will be co-hosting with me on VSiN Primetime, and you will hear him, of course, when the season starts once a week on this feed as well. But he's going to jump on the podcast, and we will break down all three of those conferences. Thanks again to Pete Sampson for joining the podcast earlier to talk some Notre Dame and where they stand. And before we get to just a rehash, and I hope this isn't a patting on the back situation, maybe slightly, but I just think it's important to say where we're at, and I'm going to keep tabs on all of these futures bets throughout the year that we gave out on the podcast throughout the summer. Our first one that we gave out was the Notre Dame unique win total bet, where we bet exactly 10 wins at 3-1. That offer still stands. And then over 10.5 wins at plus 138, which now has moved 4 cents to the over. So actually a not great bet based off of how the market has moved off of the news of Charles Jagasaw being out. But we're going to add one more. This is going to be maybe the final futures bet into our summer portfolio. Right now on the podcast, official plays, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. This will be number 10. I think we keep it at 10 and we're good to go. So if we remember back to early on in the offseason, late May, Brad Powers, college football handicapper, was on the podcast, and one of his best bets, you had to lay a hefty price, was Oregon to make the college football playoff at minus 220. That number has since moved a decent amount. At DraftKings, it's out to minus $3. At Circa, minus 380. It's all in that minus $3 range. So I really like Oregon. And to be honest, I did not get down on minus 220. I'm not opposed to laying minus 220 when there is believed to be an edge. But I looked at that Oregon team, and I really like this Oregon team. I agree with the market movement to make Dylan Gabriel the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. No, I'm not going to bet him. Listen back to the podcast from earlier in the summer when we talked about how to bet the Heisman market, maybe look at some longer shots. And then, of course, I contradicted myself and gave out Nico Imaleava, the quarterback of Tennessee, at 18-1, which is not really a long shot. But regardless, I really like this Oregon team. My hesitation about playing them in a couple of different markets is I'm not confident that at 8-1, it's a good bet for them to win the national championship. I'm not confident that they're going to win the Big Ten at around plus 250, plus 200 is right now sitting there at DraftKings. But what I am confident in is that they're going to make the playoff. Good job, Tim. It's minus $3 now. What are we going to do? That's where we get creative. And you can do whatever you want and add whoever you'd like to said parlay. And I know this is the college football betting podcast, but on Monday night on VSiN Primetime, I gave out a little cross-sport parlay, and this is currently available, price still there at DraftKings. We're going to grab Oregon to make the playoff. It's minus $3, so go ahead and click on Oregon at minus $3 on the yes to make the college football playoff. And then we're going to go to the NFL, and we're going to grab the Philadelphia Eagles to win the NFC East. That is sitting at minus 110 at DraftKings. And ladies and gentlemen, when you put that together, it's plus 154. Now, for comparison's sake, at Circa, Oregon minus 380 to make the college football playoff, and the Philadelphia Eagles have moved out to a minus 135 favorite. Real quickly on the Eagles, this isn't an NFL podcast, but I do like this Eagles team. They fell apart down the stretch. Nick Sirianni brought in a pair of new coordinators in Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio. They went out in the draft, as they tend to do, because Howie Roseman is a G and he knows how to fix things. They went out and got Quinyon Mitchell to add to the secondary. That was a big concern. They drafted Cooper DeJean, who currently sits on the NFI list, but still, you went out and got a weapon in Cooper DeJean. You added more depth to your wide receiver room in Johnny Wilson, a guy that I liked a lot from Florida State. You bring in Will Shipley from Clemson. You bring in Saquon Barkley, maybe a little bit of an overpay, but I don't care. It's just for this year. And then you look at what's going on in Dallas. The win total has gone down from 10.5 down to 9.5 on Dallas. You haven't had a back-to-back winner, even though that shouldn't really matter when it comes to handicapping in that division since 2004. So we are going to pair the Eagles to win the NFC East with Oregon to make the playoff. That comes out to a plus 154 cross sport parlay. I look at this Oregon schedule, ladies and gentlemen. They are going to be a favorite in every single game. They start off against Idaho and Boise State. They play Oregon State, the Civil War, on the road in Corvallis September 14th. But from a conference standpoint, they avoid Penn State. However, they play Ohio State. They play Michigan. They play Michigan on the road. That'll be a challenge. They get three consecutive teams that will be off their bye week in Maryland, at Wisconsin, and Washington. But all in all, I think the way that Dan Lanning has put this team together, both via the portal, how he has recruited at an elite level, they went out and brought in one of the bigger acquisitions in the transfer portal and Evan Stewart from Texas A&M to pair him up with Tez Johnson, who was their second leading receiver. Troy Franklin does move on to the NFL. And I circle back, man, to this. As someone, as you know, if you've listened to this podcast, because I reminded you a lot, who had Bo Nix at 30-1, as did Adam Burke, as did Femi Abebefe, and he was odds on at minus 185 to win the Heisman Trophy going into the Pac-12 championship game, which, of course, they lost, and he did not play well. That is Bo Nix. I think Dillon Gabriel's better. I think he fits Willie Stein's scheme better. I think there's better pieces around them. They're minus $3 for a reason. They're minus 380 at Circa for a reason to make the playoff. I would be very surprised if Oregon is not playing in the playoff. Now, do I think they'll win the conference? I picked them to do so, but my prediction is the winner of the October 12th game, Ohio State host or visiting Oregon, will lose the championship to that team. There will not be a Oregon-Washington situation. Still pains me inside. All right, let's do this real quickly and get out of here. Let's revisit our best bets that we have handed out. They are all in the podcast feed, and these are the best bets and where they stand right now. We're going to keep tabs on all of them, all 10 of them, throughout the year and see how we ultimately end up. We laid some juice, but some of these numbers have moved in our favor. So we mentioned the June 13th Notre Dame unique angle to bet them. That is the only one as of now, knock on wood, that has not moved in our direction, and it moved 4 cents to the over because of the news of Charles Jagasaw, and there was some under money that came in under 10.5. So we sit with an exact 10 wins at 3-1, over 10.5 plus 138. What we essentially created, and go back and listen to me blabber about it on June 13th, a Notre Dame over 9.5 at minus $2. I still feel comfortable about that. You heard Pete Sampson mention, if they win 9 games, it's a disaster. And I would agree. Could they lose to Texas A&M? Yes. Are they an underdog to Texas A&M? Yes. But outside of that, they should not lose 2 games after Texas A&M if they were to lose that game. So I still feel okay where we stand on our created over 9.5 market. July 2nd, UCLA. Under 5.5 wins at the time. The price was minus $1.40 at DraftKings. That is the number that we grabbed. And right now at DraftKings, the market sits at under 5, minus 125. And Circa, how about this, is sitting at 4.5. So Deshaun Foster's squad, it's going to be a massive challenge. Phil Steele pointed out that it is the biggest difference in schedule strength from last year to this year in the entire country. Also on July 2nd, I did a long discussion on the Heisman market and when you should bet it, shouldn't bet favorites. And then I immediately contradicted myself and gave out Nico Imeleava, the quarterback of Tennessee, at 18-1. Hey, the market moved in our direction, though, so we're feeling a little bit better. It was 18-1 at DraftKings. It's now 15-1 at DraftKings, 15-1 at Circa. July 9th, Phil Steele was on the program that particular day, and we talked about Iowa, and I said, boy, you made a pretty good point about the Iowa Hawkeyes. FanDuel had Iowa at minus $1.34 to over 7.5. Stations here in town had Iowa over 7.5 at minus 135. Right now, 7.5 doesn't exist anymore in the market. It's all 8s, and FanDuel even moved to an 8.5. This is a team in Iowa that hopefully takes care of business against UCLA, which would be very nice for our 2 win totals, but a team that returns a ton of production on the defensive side, bringing a new offensive coordinator. Finally, Tim Lester replaces Brian Ferentz. So even over 8, I still would look at it, but we sit all right at over 7.5. 3 days later, we did our Mountain West special when we had a bunch of coaches come in to the program on VSiN Primetime, played those back for you on the podcast. And then me and JVT, who wrote up the Mountain West for the VSiN College Football Betting Guide, discussed a couple of our favorite plays, and I added in Hawaii. Over 4.5 wins at minus $1.35. Circa, how about this? Sits at over 5.5 at minus $1.20 for the Rainbow Warriors. And DraftKings has moved that out to 5. I do feel a little uneasy now that Stephen McBride is suspended indefinitely for the Rainbow Warriors. But boy, was there a lot of optimism from Timmy Chang regarding this squad. And you play Delaware State, You play Northern Iowa, a pair of FCS teams at home. You get arguably the two worst teams in the conference in New Mexico and Nevada at home. Who knows what San Diego State and or Utah State will look like this year on the road. I think Sam Houston State on the road will be a toss-up as well. So the Bows, we like the movement there. They sit at around 5 or 5.5, and I think they get there. So I feel pretty good about where we stand on Hawaii, given out on July 12th. We had a couple pizza bets that JVT and I discussed on Follow the Money, and then I talked about them on the podcast, where we went long shot hunting in the Heisman market and found some rogue numbers, to be honest, here in town. So I know it was a bit unfair to talk about a market at the Westgate Superbook, but KJ Jefferson and Kyren Drones, KJ Jefferson, the quarterback of UCF, Kyren Drones, the quarterback of Virginia Tech, both were sitting at 150-1 at Westgate and was able to grab both of those. KJ Jefferson, a guy that Gus Malzahn said is the closest thing he's had to Cam in the last 14 years. Of course, Gus Malzahn was Cam Newton's offensive coordinator at Auburn in that magical 2010 season. And then Kyren Drones, Virginia Tech's a team that's gotten a lot of hype, a lot of buzz this year coming back. One of the most production-laden teams in the country. Kyren Drones, a true dual-threat quarterback. And that number, fortunately for us, has drifted down. So both of them now sit at 100-1. And then the last two bets that we gave out in the last two podcasts, we got a little creative and we went into the conference win total market. Duke under 2.5 ACC wins. At the time of record, it was sitting at 2.5 minus $1.20. That's now out to minus $1.40. And then the most recent podcast with Phil Steele last week, we gave out Houston under 2.5 conference wins at minus $1.35. That's moved out to minus $1.40. So that's where we stand. We've got 10 bets heading into the college football season. Obviously, we'll be adding weekly bets. I was going to give out Notre Dame, Texas A&M under 49. Sadly, that number moved to 47. Still would probably lean that way, but I'm not racing to go under 47. Maybe we get a little bit of buyback before that game gets going on Labor Day weekend. But of course, we'll have best bets with all of our shows on those Thursdays with Matt Eumanns. The best bets from Wes Reynolds, by the way, Ohio under 6.5 wins and Bowling Green over 6.5 wins. Those numbers both available in the market. So those are our best bets for the upcoming season. We'll keep tabs on them and hopefully we have ourselves a winning offseason as well as a winning regular season. Later this week, Adam Burke is going to jump on the podcast. He's going to help us preview the AAC, the ACC, and the Sun Belt. We will be back multiple times a week now. Here we are in the month of August. Thanks again to all of you who have listened to the podcast, rated, reviewed this podcast. It's been phenomenal to see the growth this summer. And I know heading into the football season, it only helps. So appreciate all of you and continue to tell some folks out there about the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Thanks to producer Ryan for all of his help behind the scenes. I am Tim Murray, and we'll be back later this week with more breakdowns of conferences. And make sure to head over to vsin.com/subscribe to get your hands on the VSiN College Football Betting Guide. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.